Sounds are more interesting than you thought. That's in a moment. Meanwhile, we've more laughter this Friday morning.
Ellie Taylor's Safe Space on Radio 4.
You're not coming to my party.
The series in which Ellie safely shares some of her controversial opinions.
And see if I can convince any of you to come over to the dark side. I mean, the correct side.
Beginning with a dislike of social get-togethers.
Parties nowadays are a total minefield of potential social faux pas. Sure, I'm delighted you're immunised, but resentful, I'll soon have to touch you.
The new series of Ellie Taylor's Safe Space. This Friday morning at 11:30 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Now here come some questions from the award-winning comedian Paul Sinha. And listeners in Crawley, Stevenage, Telford and Runcorn have no excuse for getting them wrong.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for that round of applause. And welcome to an all-new episode of Paul Sinha's General Knowledge, in which I, Paul Sinha, attempt to walk the tightrope between entertainingly knowledgeable and hatefully smug. It's a very difficult balancing act. But if anyone should be able to do it, it's surely me. A man who honestly expects Sir Lewis Hamilton, having finished a disappointing fourth in the 2012 Formula One World Championships, to take consolation from the fact that in the same year, at the PDC World Darts Championships, in the final, Adrian Lewis beat Andy Hamilton. By a comedically large margin of 7-3. I mean, that is, of course, Andy Hamilton, the darts player, not Andy Hamilton, the award-winning comedian and writer. One is best known for the situation comedy Outnumbered. The other is best known for a comedic situation in which he was outnumbered. Tenuous? Undoubtedly so. But you try writing the definitive joke linking professional darts to one of the great satirists of the age. I tried it with Andy Fordham and Andy Zaltzman, and that was 3 days of my life I'm never getting back. It seems appropriate that this episode should start with Lewis Hamilton, Sir Lewis Hamilton, both of whose names are effectively pension plans for the two most diametrically opposite human beings on the planet. Hamilton for Lin-Manuel Miranda and Lewis for Lawrence Fox. Now, there is a podcast waiting to happen. Hamilton is arguably the country's most successful ever sportsman, and in 2020 had the honour of being listed in Time magazine's 100 most influential people on the planet. Only two Brits made that list in 2020, along with Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the creator of Fleabag. I don't know if any of you remember Fleabag. I'm sort of aware that we now live our lives divided into BC and ABC, before COVID and after Barnard Castle. Or Anno Dominic, if you like. And but Fleabag is about a woman about town attempting to navigate life's disappointments and her dysfunctional family and her own aspirations. It's very much a 21st century take on Hyacinth Bucket. But back to Lewis Hamilton, who is unlikely to actually win Time Person of the Year, despite the fact that the amount he pays in tax annually would be enough to fund a school fete in Stevenage. Yes, Stevenage. I love the fact that one of Britain's most aspirational sporting figures is an icon of such a relatively non-glamorous town. I mean, to put this in some perspective, Stevenage's second most famous public figure is a woman called Carmen La Ballestia, whose claim to fame is something she did in Stevenage on January the 7th, 1985. Does anyone know?
No.
She gave birth to Lewis Hamilton. Perhaps I'm being unfair to Stevenage, however. E.M. Forster used to live there, and much of his novel Howard's End is set there. The last chapter is the story of the Halifax Adverts. Don't give me that. Inevitably. I'd like to say at this point, if you don't like tenuous puns, you're in the totally wrong studio. Inevitably, I must ask, does anyone know the two-word epigraph of the novel Howard's End?
Only connect.
I know this.
I knew someone would know. It is... It's up to me to mark the answer. Thank you, madam. That's right. Only connect. Yep, the town of Stevenage contains the house that inspired Howard's End, which indirectly inspired the BBC's most cerebral game show, on which my first husband once reached the semi-finals. First husband, yes. We're still happily married, by the way. I'm just a pessimist. Stevenage is also directly north of Nebworth House, now known for rock concerts, but once the home of the English writer and politician Edward Bulwer Lytton. Edward Bulwer Lytton has a number of notable facts about him, which is just as well, because thanks to Edwina Currie and Anne Widdecombe, having both conservative politician and writer on one CV is not going to get you onto this show on its own. But let's start with the fact that, according to Fulham FC, Bulwer Lytton lived in the original Craven Cottage. He married the writer Rosina Bulwer Lytton, and when their marriage split up, he falsely accused her of insanity and had her detained in an asylum. The resultant public outcry led to the inevitable outcome. He was raised to the peerage. I mean, clearly he was well connected. How well connected? Well, in 1862, on the death of Otto I, he was offered the monarchy of Greece. That is well connected. As a writer, he coined phrases that are still commonly used today. The great unwashed, pursuit of the almighty dollar, and the pen is mightier than the sword. The last of which caused a number of unnecessary deaths at the Battle of Balaclava. But it was for the opening line of his novel Paul Clifford that he remains best known. Does anybody in this audience know what that opening line was?
It was a dark and stormy night.
It was a dark and stormy night. What a great answer that was. That was considered such a dreadfully florid use of English that there is now an annual Bulwer Lytton fiction contest held since 1982, which claims to seek the worst opening sentence in literature. I mean, everyone's taste is different. I don't really approve of this sneeriness. However a novel starts, for some it is the best of lines, for others it's the worst of lines. I mean, our audience has really improved over three series. So, E.M. Forster, Edward Bulwer Lytton. Not quite the references you were going to expect from Stevenage, because that reputation was forged by the fact that in 1946... Can anyone tell me what happened to Stevenage in 1946?
It became a new town.
It became not just a new town, Britain's first new town. An ambitious and imaginative plan to create suburban utopias to lift the housing strain on big cities. And it's fair to say that opinion is split on its success. 97.3. But this week's show would like to redress the balance and bring to life the UK's much maligned new towns through the medium of facts. Britain's second new town was Crawley, perhaps most famous for local maths teacher Ramesh Ranganathan. Who decided to forge a career as a stand-up comedian, entertaining the masses, certainly, but leaving the town of Crawley numerically illiterate. And if you're from Crawley and you're thinking, hang on, there are seven sides to every story, you've kind of proven my point. Now, as so many London doctors in their 50s have put it, let's move to Hemel Hempstead. Not least because the town's PR team could do with a bit of assistance. They proudly boast to have the first freestanding multi-storey car park in Britain. Sorry, if a king's not buried there, it's not a boast. Hemel Hempstead is the home of world record-breaking Ian Lygo. Does anyone know what world record Ian Lygo holds?
No.
Nope.
Ian Ligo has won more consecutive episodes of a TV game show than anyone else in history. In 1998, he won 75 consecutive episodes of 100%, a low-budget Channel 5 game show that had no presenter. There are 75 times as many episodes of Ian Ligo winning on 100% as there are episodes of It's a Royal Knockout. The audience grew tired of Ian Ligo's constant presence on the show. In 1998, Channel 5's audience were not interested in ostentatious displays of knowledge, and cowardly producers eventually told Ian Ligo, enough is enough. If you want to know what people who dislike ostentatious displays of knowledge are up to now, just check the replies to any of my tweets. Hemel Hempstead is also home to an unusual prep school called Lockers Park School. This school is unusual in that, despite being relatively unknown, established in 1874, its relatively low number of Wikipedia alumni, which is 16, is rather offset by the status of many of the alumni. For a start, there's Lord Louis Mountbatten, known in this country as the last Viceroy of India. And in India as who? At the other end of the patriotism scale is none other than the spy, Guy Burgess, a name history has now decided is incomplete without that of his colleague, Donald MacLean. Donald MacLean is, of course, not the same Don MacLean who topped the charts on both sides of the Atlantic with rather cryptic pop ballads. But I do hope that when Donald MacLean died in 1983, at least somebody ran the headline, Bye Bye Mr. Soviet Spy. The school's first famous alumnus was Prince Alan Mayhew, who, of course, as we all know, was the son of... I can't believe you don't know this one. It's Emperor Tewodros II of Ethiopia, of course. What the devil was an Ethiopian prince doing at a relatively unknown English prep school in the 1870s? The reason was, in 1868, the British Abyssinian campaign took place. These days, a British Abyssinian campaign simply involves a notice on a local Facebook group saying, have you seen my cat? And the resulting overuse of the care emoji. But this was an attempt to rescue missionaries imprisoned by Emperor Tewodros. British troops succeeded in a mission with the customary speed and efficiency that more seasoned empire observers will find familiar, and the Ethiopian emperor took his own life. Or as the Ethiopians put it, was killed by the British. He had in his will stipulated that in the event of his death, he would like his son to be taken to Britain to be educated there. And a Victorian adventurer called Captain Speedy took on the task, bringing home with him some Ethiopian artefacts to sell to the British Museum. This tale ends rather sadly. It wasn't just that his Latin declension was subpar, but he died of pleurisy at the age of 18, whereupon Queen Victoria, so touched by the sad tale of this likeable Ethiopian, ensured he was buried at St. George's Chapel, Windsor. This is the exact same resting place as Prince Philip. So someone's ghost is in for quite a shock. So that's a Russian spy, an Ethiopian prince, the last viceroy of India. To this we add Mansur Ali Khan. Does anyone know by what title he was better known? I knew someone would get this. The Nawab of Pataudi, the ninth Nawab of Pataudi. And in 1962, what world record was set by this member of minor aristocracy in India?
Cricket record.
It was a cricket record. He was the youngest ever international test cricket captain. By the way, he must have been confused with the eighth Nawab of Pataudi, the only man to have ever played test cricket for both England and India. If that sounds like a euphemism, by the way, it really isn't. It's far more shocking than that. He actually played test cricket for both England and India. Dennis Law, eat your heart out. That one is a euphemism. There does seem to be something in the water in Hemel Hempstead. Other Hemel Hempstead residents include Tallulah Riley, an English actress best known as the only human being in history to have done what on two separate occasions?
Married Elon Musk.
Great answer. She married successful investor and struggling engineer Elon Musk twice. As it says on Wikipedia, M2010, Div 2012, M2013, Div 2016. Unusual names, but they had to call their kids something. In a canny prenuptial agreement, it was agreed that the marriage would only succeed if Elon Musk's business ventures succeeded, because Tallulah Riley had always believed in PayPal infallibility. Between 1961 and 1964, a second wave saw five more new towns created. They called it a second wave because the opportunity to fine restaurant dining was non-existent. The Lancashire town of Skelmersdale has a claim to fame as integral to the town as the Beatles is to Liverpool. It was the birthplace of Sonia. No... No visit to Skelmersdale is complete without the Sonia walking tour, and the tourists still queue up to have a drink at the branch of Flair's where Sonia had her first live PA. In 1993, Sonia was runner-up in the Eurovision Song Contest. A little fact here. That was the 20th top three finish for the UK in the first 37 years of the competition. In the following 27 years, can anyone tell me how many times we've come in the top three?
Once.
Not at all.
It's actually three. It's three. Isn't that a shocking state of affairs? Ooh, ah, just a little bit. Can you name all three?
Katrina and the Waves.
The three were, obviously, Katrina and the Waves, which is also the answer to what do the people of New Orleans most remember at the year 2005? Imani, remember her? She came second. She had a second place finish. And Jessica Garlick came in third. She's now best known for the shocked reaction of Peter Kay's father, incredulous that you could put Garlick and Jessica together. Dorley was the next new town. Maybe you haven't heard of Dorley. Maybe that's because in 1968 it was renamed...
Telford.
Telford. It was Telford, named after the great engineer Thomas Telford, joining a list of things named after great engineers, such as the Eiffel Tower, the Fuel Diesel, and, of course, Brunel University, named after Isambard Kingdom University. The mayor of Dorley had 5 years to twin it with the Brazilian city of Salvador. He missed surreal opportunity there. My favourite son of Dorley was the winner of the first ever Stanhope Medal. The Stanhope Medal is the name given for an award given annually by the Royal Humane Society for the best individual rescue of the year. And this award has had some celebrity winners, including Tsar Alexander I of Russia, Isambard Kingdom Brunel, again, Bram Stoker, and indeed, Duncan Goodhue, who was once universally known as the Bald Swimmer. But in 2000, his reputation was turned upside down when he resuscitated a man after a cardiac event. He's now known as the Bald Life-Saving Swimmer. But in 1874, there was the first ever winner of the medal when it was called the Stanhope Medal. He was the second mate on a Cunard ship called Russia, travelling from New York to Liverpool, when he saw a man fall overboard. Without any hesitation, he jumped in to rescue the man and was acclaimed as a national hero. He received not one word of thanks, not one message of gratitude from the man he jumped in to save. This is because the attempted rescue was entirely unsuccessful. The passenger disappeared, presumed drowned, and was never seen again. This did nothing to dampen the reputation of the rescuer, Captain Matthew Webb. I know him as the Eddie the Eagle Edwards of Sea Rescue. And he was also the Duncan Goodhue of swimmers. As the following year, in 1875, he became the first man to...
Swim
the English Channel. Swimming the English Channel is a feat that's not as fashionable as it used to be. But it must be said that since Brexit, swimming the English Channel is the only way to get to France that doesn't involve a two-hour queue at passport control. It is just you and David Walliams. This is where Captain Matthew Webb should have chosen to rest on his laurels. Instead, he decided that what he really wanted to do was swim Niagara Falls. Going from the English Channel to Niagara, in other words, going from a hugely impressive event to a near impossible one, is like a comedian thinking that just because he's nailed a joke on the news quiz, he was ready for just a minute. I was given a minute to talk about Nigerian footballers, and I started with, Rick Jemba Jemba, and I managed to commit hesitation, repetition and deviation in three words. It's not my usual policy to quote the same poet twice in one series, but after an early homage to William McGonagall, I now find that Scotland's finest ever writer also penned an obituary to the untimely death of Captain Matthew Webb. These are his actual words. "Alas, brave Captain Webb has acted the part of a fool by attempting to swim the mighty Niagara Whirlpool, which I'm sorry to say and to relate has brought him to an untimely fate. 'Twas in the year 1883, with the people of America, he did agree for $10,000 to swim through that yawning whirlpool. But alas, he failed in doing so, the self-conceited fool." Seriously, steady on, William. The Worcestershire town of Redditch is the birthplace of arguably Britain's most famous man. I say arguably because the metric I'm using is most number of Twitter followers. It's easy for an older generation to mock or take no interest in more contemporary pop culture figures, but it turns out that Harry Styles is a hugely multi-talented, versatile and bold man. Bold in the sense that he once dated Taylor Swift, much of whose pop career has been spent raking over destructive ex-boyfriends and relationships. As well as the British pop star Harry Styles, Taylor Swift has dated the British pop star Calvin Harris, the British actor Tom Hiddleston, and is currently dating the British actor Joe Alwyn, who starred in both the 2018 films The Favourite and Mary, Queen of Scots. I mean, literally, the only reason I need to know that Taylor Swift is dating Joe Alwyn is you never know when it might come up in a quiz. I mean, that's Redditch done. We now got Runcorn. It's a real shame that for most people, Runcorn only means that town with the bridge. It actually has three bridges. But then there are the towns designated new towns in the third wave between 1967 and 1970. And I'd like to close the show by telling you about my favourite of these. Northampton is one of the largest towns in the UK. However, the way in which you define the population of a town is so varied, it's best not to get too attached to the idea. And indeed, it's best not to say to Mark Steele, "Hang on, some of these are cities." Northampton has its charms, a former centre of shoemaking. Princess Diana was once given the freedom of the town in 1989. Well, I can only imagine how life-changing that would have been. In 1929, the MP for Northampton, Margaret Bondfield, became the UK's first female cabinet minister. The experiment to have female cabinet ministers has had mixed results since, and the so-called Priti Patel incident has left the concept very much in the air. The reason I love Northampton is this. It is where I took part in my first national quiz tournament in 2009. I finished 38th, and that was enough for me to keep at it. And 10 years later, in June 2019, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. One of my first thoughts was, the British Quiz Championships are taking place in Northampton this September. I'll give it a go. I won by a solitary point. By a solitary point, for 12 months, I was the British quiz champion. There were headlines across the globe. I mean, none of them were about me, the football and Donald Trump, but there were still headlines. later that evening, when I had a chance to compare my answers with those of the legendary Kevin Ashman, who had finished 1 point behind me, it did not take me long to find the question I knew the answer to that he didn't. Which English actor and star of the films The Favourite and Mary, Queen of Scots has since 2018 been in a relationship with pop superstar Taylor Swift? There have been three greatest days in my life. My first British Quiz Championship title, my first wedding, and the day that I finally found out what the two nuns in the bath joke was all about. Thank you, Taylor Swift's insatiable appetite for Englishmen. And thank you, my insatiable appetite for finding out facts. Whether they be glamorous, entertainment gossip, or the facts behind Britain's much maligned new towns. Before we go, does anyone have any questions they'd like to ask me?
A Premier League football team has a vice president that headlined at Nebworth twice. Who is it?
It's not Watford, is it? Is Elton John still involved with them?
It's not Watford, but begins with the same letter.
Wolverhampton Wanderers?
Correct. Wolverhampton Wanderers, and it's Robert Plant.
Oh, now that is a fact. Thank you very much. That is a great plan.
Good evening, Paul. You mentioned Runcorn, which puts me in mind of the River Mersey. It's another football question. Which football team has its ground nearest to the River Mersey?
It's Tranmere Rovers.
Nope.
Oh.
Stockport County.
Is it? Oh, that's a brilliant...
It's at the start of the Mersey.
Which sport commentator came up with opal fruits made to make your mouth water?
It's the late, great Murray Walker.
Indeed.
And he also did one about birds and trill as well. His second most famous one was... It was selling trill to people that kept birds, I believe. But it's the late, great Murray Walker.
My favourite quiz question. Which of his ears did painter Vincent van Gogh cut off?
Neither, if the theory is to be believed. It's believed to have been cut off by his friend and friendly rival and other great painter, Paul Gauguin.
And which one was it?
Well, I've just answered your first question correctly. But if it's which one did Paul Gauguin allegedly cut off, although no one knows the true truth, right ear?
No, it was his left. All the pictures he painted of himself were in the mirror.
Ah, I see.
Do you know the name of the highest village in England?
Flash?
Yes, it is in Staffordshire. Yes, so the
Thank you for listening. Good night. Paul Sinha's General Knowledge was written and performed by Paul Sinha, with additional material by Oliver Levy. And the producer was Ed Morrish. It was a Lead Mojo Something Else co-production for BBC Radio 4.